We expected something, something better than before. We expected something more. Do you really think you can just put it in a safe behind a painting, lock it up and leave? Do you really think you can just put it in a safe behind a painting, lock it up and leave?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Trita Parsi, who is the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, and A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Trita Parsi.
Thank you for having me.
And obviously, in this forthcoming election, it's going to be a close race. If everybody who voted in 2008 were to vote, Obama would win in a landslide, but there's a lack of enthusiasm on his side. Enormous amounts of money is being spent by super PACs to elect Romney and Ryan. And you also have a lot of voter suppression. But then you have this other thing called the wild card, in terms of foreign policy, and foreign policy is not very much an issue in this campaign, but it could be if you are following the Israeli press. It is a buzz with rumors that Prime Minister Netanyahu and Defense Minister Barak are determined to attack Iran before the elections. What is your sense, Trita Parsi, of how real this is?
I find the likelihood of the U.S. attacking Iran...
Israel attacking Iran.
I find the likelihood of Israel attacking Iran before the elections as also being somewhat small, probably no more than 15% and 20%. I think the Netanyahu government draws a tremendous benefit from issuing these threats, because these threats have been a tremendously successful strategy for the Israelis to push the United States and the entire world to impose unprecedented sanctions on Iran, making the threat that unless sanctions are imposed, the Israelis will take military action. So in these circumstances, for the Israelis to continue that tactic would be successful if the United States succumbs to the pressure and imposes further sanctions on Iran and gets itself even deeper into a conflict dynamic with Iran. On the other hand, if the Obama administration were to push back and try to resist this pressure, then that would also arguably work in the favor of the Netanyahu government, because it would accentuate the difference that exists between the between the Obama administration and a prospective Romney administration, which then, in the analysis of both the Israelis, the Romney camp, and the Obama camp, would benefit Romney in the elections. So making the threat is essentially a win-win for Netanyahu. Actualizing the threat of actually going and bombing Iran brings, however, completely unpredictable circumstances into play. And that's why I think that the Netanyahu government is taking the opportunity of issuing this threat perhaps for one of the few last times, because once the elections are over, and particularly if Obama wins, the Israelis may believe that the likelihood of that strategy of issuing threats and pressuring the U.S. in the desired direction will not be as successful any longer.
So just hypothetically, though, given the level of the speculation in the Israeli press, and it's been going on for now for some time, so it's difficult to ignore. And if it's a bluff, it is a very well-crafted and clever bluff. But a lot of people in Israel think it's not a bluff, that it's for real. There's also been a leak, may be dubious, allegedly from the defense ministry in Israel, of some very sophisticated attack plans involving cyber warfare, the targeting of rocket scientists and Iranian rocket scientists and nuclear scientists, and possibly the targeting of leadership. Is that playing in Iran? Because what I've seen from the response of the Iranians, the Iranian government, they've been basically dismissing all this as a bluff, just as you've suggested it's a bluff. So is there anybody in Iran? I mean, the idea that that attack plans are being leaked makes you wonder about the entire veracity of the leaks. But is there any sense that this may not be so much an attack on nuclear facilities, but an attack on the regime itself?
Well, I would first say that these attacks and various attack plans and airing in the open this type of a debate actually has been taking place for approximately 10 years. It's just that it's become much, much more intense in the last couple of years. But this is something that's been going on, and I would say that the general view in the Iranian defense establishment, I would assess as being that if the Israelis actually did have the capability of striking, they would probably have struck by now. The fact that they're not striking and just issuing these threats is something that reveals their lack of capabilities of doing so. But issuing the threat nevertheless has these other benefits, such as getting the world to impose a very, very strict and unprecedented sanctions regime on Iran. The Iranians don't view any attack on the nuclear facilities as stopping there anyways, in the sense that they tend to view this as a war against the regime as a whole, or actually their strategy may be to try to turn it into that in order to be able to draw other types of benefits from any potential attack.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Trita Parsi, who's the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, and A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. Well, Dr. Parsi, if indeed, again, these are very successful bluffs and very clever bluffs, I'm astounded that the P5 plus one, that is the permanent members of the Security Council of the United Nations, along with Germany, have fallen for the bluff. I would assume that supporters of Iran, at least not necessarily supporters of the West, China and Russia, the fact that they're leaning on Iran may have something to do with the fact that nobody would want a war that might end up in the closure of the Straits of Hormuz and the global economy going into a massive depression. That's the downside. So in terms of the bluff being taken seriously, it clearly is, isn't it? Isn't that why people...
Yes, no, as I said earlier on, it's been a very successful strategy because in the assessment of the Israeli government as well as a lot of analysts, we would not have seen this degree of sanctions had it not been for the Israeli threats. At the same time, one also has to make an assessment of what is actually taking place then, because these sanctions have been imposed in an, again, unprecedented number, yet the threats of military action have in no way succeeded. On the contrary, it's still there and it's increasing. So one does have to ask the question of what is the wisdom of the American and the European strategy of going down this route, particularly mindful of the fact that the threats from Israel in no way has been decreasing. Now, of course, one has to keep in mind as well that Iran has been engaged in activities that definitely needs to be addressed, and that there's some significant challenges that are posed by Iran's nuclear program. But the belief that this sanctions strategy would be that particularly successful, or that it would be preventing war, I find highly questionable. And again, it doesn't seem likely that we would have been gone as far as we have now with it had it not been for the wild card coming in from the Netanyahu government in Israel.
And obviously, one doesn't want to belabor the possibility of talking further about something that's a bluff as opposed to something that's real. But in order to make it a successful bluff, it has to appear to be real. And that's the conundrum we have in trying to analyze this. Do you think that if an Israeli strike were to take place, that the Iranian government would, as it's promised to do, immediately close the Straits of Hormuz and therefore invite American participation?
No, I think it all depends on the success of the strike. If the strike only manages to cause limited damage to the Iranian program, limited collateral damage as well, few civilian casualties, then there's a likelihood that the Iranians actually will do the opposite and actually play the victim card, go to the UN, seek condemnation of the Israelis there, and then make the threat of withdrawing from the non-proliferation treaty using Article 10 in the treaty, which would give them the legal pretext to be able to do so, and by that request that the sanctions regime that has been imposed on them is lifted. In the absence, we have to keep in mind a lot of these countries that have agreed to these sanctions have done so highly reluctantly, but they've nevertheless done so because of a lot of American arm twisting and because of the threat that unless they did so, Israel would attack. Well, if Israel already has attacked, then I find it quite likely that several of the Asian countries that were at a minimum would stop harming their own economy by agreeing to a sanctions regime that they never really believed in the first place, that they were essentially coerced into participating in. So the Iranians may actually try to take benefit of an attack if it only manages to do some limited harm to it. If, however, the strike is very successful, then I think it opens up the possibility of the Iranians retaliating, including with trying to close the Strait of Hormuz. But I would put the closing of the Strait of Hormuz as a very one of the last measures the Iranians would be taking, because it would invite not only American condemnation and potentially American military participation, but also many of Iran's own allies, such as China, would also be significantly harmed by such a move. And as a result, it would be a very dangerous card for the Iranians to play.
So a lot of analysts are puzzled by why Israel would even be contemplating an attack on Iran at a moment where Iran's foreign policy appears to be suffering severe reversals, with the Assad regime teetering, at least by lots of analyses. And the notion is that the loss of the Assads in Syria would be a huge blow to Iran's foreign policy and would weaken Hezbollah. Presumably, given what happened with the last Israeli war against Lebanon, where the result of that war was pretty much a stalemate, but the leader of Hezbollah, Nasser Nasrallah, became a hero in the Arab world. So the assumption would be that an Israeli attack on Iran would reverse the situation in terms of Iran and Hezbollah's possibility of suffering major reversals in the region and be a reprieve for the Assads. Is that your analysis?
I think there's some truth in that analysis, in the sense that the Iranians are definitely suffering a tremendous amount of damage to their standing as a result of their support for Assad and as a result of Assad's butchering of his own people. Right now, I would say that Iran's standing in the Arab world is perhaps comparable to what it was back in the 1980s when Iran was involved in a war with Saddam Hussein's Iraq, which means very low and a huge blow compared to where it was just a couple of years ago. If the Israelis attack Iran, Israel would have done a huge strategic mistake, in the sense that the regional conversation right now has shifted away from Israel, has certainly shifted away from the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and has been focusing on the Arab Spring and what's happening in Syria. An attack on Iran would put Israel back at the center of the regional conversation, which is something that the Iranians would be able then to take advantage of, both to benefit themselves, but also to benefit the Assad regime. Now, this all is premised on the idea that the American assessment, which is that the Israeli military really has very limited capabilities to do severe damage to the Iranian program. The Israelis insist that that's not the case and that they have capabilities that the U.S. is not even aware of. But nevertheless, confidence in the Israeli military right now does not seem to be particularly high amongst the top leaders of the American military.
Well, just in closing then, Dr. Tridipasi, the non-aligned movements having their meeting in Iran at the end of this month, August, and Mohamed Morsi, the new leader of Egypt, is going to go to that meeting. That's the first time an Egyptian leader has been there since the 1979 Iranian Revolution. And that's significant in itself. And I take it the fact that the leaders of the non-aligned movement will be meeting in Iran at the end of this month makes it somewhat dubious about the idea of anybody attacking a country where you have meetings of world leaders. So two questions.
Well, you're absolutely right. And what it comes down to, again, is that the timing of these threats have really, A, nothing to do with any particular advancement in the Iranian nuclear program. Doesn't seem to be jiving with any reasonably favorable moment from a regional perspective. But the one thing that it does seem to connect with is the American election season. And that's why I would go back to what I said earlier on. This is most likely just another one of a long range, a long row of Israeli threats that have been aimed primarily to affect America's position and actions rather than signaling any real desire or readiness by Israel to take military action.
And just a final comment on the Egyptian leader, Mohamed Morsi, going to Tehran. Is that a big deal?
It certainly is a big deal in the sense that, as you mentioned, there hasn't been any of those visits. One of the things the Iranians had hoped for once Mubarak fell was that it would open up the opportunity for Iran and Egypt to renew diplomatic relations, which they so far have not. So it certainly opens up certain possibilities, but Morsi is also walking a fine balancing act. His first visit, of course, was to Saudi Arabia, and one of the things that the Saudis wanted to hear from him was that he would not move particularly close or particularly far in getting close to the government in Tehran. I suspect that he won't, but I think also he understands that from Egypt's own self-interest, having the capability of communicating with the Iranian government in a more frequent and stable level is probably to their own benefit as well. But he doesn't want to signal any significant movement towards Tehran, particularly not under these circumstances when Iran's standing is so low in the Sunni Arab world.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Trita Parsi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Trita Parsi, who is the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, and A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.